was so upset that I actually can't see what he was doing. So, we'll go on. I'm actually glad we won't be able to see what we're doing. I'm doing an applause, so that was a good one. My voice is doing pretty good. I have a lozenge, so if it spits out on anyone in the front row, I apologize. But I will need that to get through this, I'm sure. All right. Many of you may be thinking, wondering, what in the world, here's some kind of thinking, are the gender differences between male, female brains, the variations in God's design? What do they have to do with being joined and fit together? We'll talk about that in a moment. I'd like to, as we begin the other seminar, is to begin with prayer. So if you would please rise and ask God to bless us. Father in heaven, we thank you so very much for the opportunity to be together. Thank you for your Sabbath day always, but we thank you that we can interact with you and with each other. We love the future you plan for us. We love the family. We thank you for giving us the opportunity throughout this weekend to be truly joined in particular. We ask your guidance and blessings that you would speak through the presenters and that you would work in the minds and hearts of everyone involved to learn these things, apply them, and benefit your church by them. We give thanks and ask all these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Most of society today wants us to think that there is no difference between male and female thinking. It's generally an underlying rule of political correctness. And they want us to recognize the physical differences, and that's what they tend to focus on, but there's absolutely no difference in the thinking. And we will find out through this presentation that there is, and it's a design difference that we need to be respectful of in order to interact together. We have many relationships within the church. Families are an intricate part of the stability of the church. Child rearing is huge. Marriages within the church are hugely important to being joined and knit together. These principles are lived out and exemplified for children within the church and with everybody else within the church. This is the right way to live, God's design to live. This has everything to do with being joined and knit together. Do you know what that is? It's the mug in Steve Allman's in the kitchen. No. No, it's not. It is basket weaving. I wanted to show you this, though. This is a weave pattern. Mrs. Hutz knows about weaves. I know Mrs. Klein does as well. Others who work with patterns, cloth, and so on. If you had every weave moving in the same direction, what kind of a strength would you have in either the basket or the cloth or the fabric? Not very strong. They have to be in alternating patterns. They have to be almost, these are, in this case, perpendicular to one another. There are many weave patterns. But if they're all moving the same way, if they're all designed to do the same thing, it would not be very strong. Cross patterns give strength and balance to the weave, and beauty and symmetry to the weave. And it helps those weavings, those carpets, those baskets, and so on, to be joined and knit together. God's design for the human male and human males and human females, in terms of their design physically and mentally, they're designed to complement each other, not compete. The God of this world wants us to clash, wants us to see those differences and fight. That's his design. That's not God's design. The differences are there to complement, that we help one another and weave a stronger pattern together. Appreciating God-designed variations in the male and female brain can help us, as a church, be joined and knit together. It works for marriages between husbands and wives. It works within family, in child-rearing, understanding the differences between how boys and girls think. It works within society, so that we, in terms of interacting with those outside of the church, receiving favor, knowing how to work with some of the opposite sex in terms of how they think, how they're wired to think, helps and serves and edifies the church. Again, God's design is to complement, not to compete. These are all scriptures that we're very well familiar with. And I'll just review them as a basis and an underlying principle and purpose for what we're doing here. The Lord God said, "It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper comparable to him." This is in Genesis 2, verse 18. We know what happened here. God had Adam name all of the animals, probably the animals' heights. Saw that every one of them had male, female, and he's wondering, where's mine? Where's my compliment? Why would God do that unless he wanted him to see the whole that is in him? God created Adam, man, with a need for the woman. There is something in us men that needs that. She's designed by God the same way. Now, that was a married relationship, but within all of human society, our interaction, male and female, is extremely important for us, and is extremely good practice in preparation for living within the God family. He who finds a wife finds a good thing. God did not make balls and chains. When you hear anyone in the world referring to their wife or their spouse as the old ball and chain, that is not God's design. We recognize that finding a wife, finding a good husband, is from God, and it is a very, very good thing. In Romans 11, verse 36, we read, "For of him and through him and to him are all things, to whom be glory forever. Amen." This is the God of the universe that's designed this. Nothing men or Satan can do can change it. God will not allow it. The number one thing Satan loved to do and has been on a course to do for 6,000 years is to destroy the human family. We're seeing the repercussions of it in our age. God will not allow that to happen for the benefit of his church. Much of God's work is done through families. 60-70% of the church, people who attend the United Church of God right now, came into the church as a result of contact from a family member. I love doing this on occasion. We didn't do it this morning, but I'd love to see a show of hands here. How many of you came in contact with God's church through a family member? Can I see your hands? Look at that. Look around. You don't think family is an intricate aspect? Thank you. Put your hands down. It's an incredibly important aspect in the work of God. Yeah, we need magazines. We need television. We need all that work. We get that. But don't ever discount what you're doing at home and what you're doing in local church areas with respect to your families. Who we marry, how we marry, how we conduct ourselves as husbands and wives, how we interact with one another. Don't think that that's apart from the work of God. It's intricate. It's huge. We're supposed to appreciate it, not be averse to it. In Ephesians 5, verse 33, Paul cites the scripture, or writes this, inspired by God. We've read this over and over. It's the basis and underlying principle for all good marriages. "Nevertheless, let each one of you, in particular, so love his own wife as himself. And let the wife see that she also loves her husband." Why doesn't it say that? Why doesn't God say, men, love and respect your wife, women, love and respect your husbands? Why does he make this in particular? He tells men to love, because even though we can do that, we're not necessarily wired for it. We're good at respecting others, for the most part, in terms of how our brains are wired. It's hard for us to love. It's hard for us to show emotions, feeling, cuddle. Women are told to respect their husbands. In their case, it's easy for them to love. They like to cuddle. It's hard for them to respect. They've got their own ideas, their own principles. I have my own value. My opinion counts. Right? So it's harder for them to respect. Doesn't mean it's impossible. In fact, what God tells us to do is exactly what we're not wired to do. Why? So we can learn. "Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding." And this principle is not just exclusive to husbands. Dwell with them with understanding. And men recognize by the scripture that if we're not treating our wives as inheritors of the kingdom of God with us, our very prayers to God can be hindered. That's very, very important. Connection makes a big difference. Here's what we'll cover this afternoon. We'll discuss a little bit about brain architecture. Much has been learned about the human brain, especially with respect to sexual differences. brain architecture, how the brain is wired physically. We're going to talk about brain chemistry, the influences on the brain, hormonal influences and how it works and when it kicks in. We'll discuss these differences in the way many women think as a result of architecture and chemistry, and we will discuss how men and women differ in terms of processing information, in terms of perception, awareness of things going on around them, and how they are wired to communicate. It doesn't mean that we're incapable of things. It means we have a leaning or a tendency. We have to work harder at the things that we don't have a tendency toward. And what I'd love to do, we'll try to save more time. We only had one role play at the end, but I'd like to get everybody involved. Once we get these principles down, I'd like to put us all through about 3 or 4 role plays. That's what the chairs are sitting up there for. So I would appreciate your involvement at the end. We'll give you a case scenario and let you work it through based upon the principles that we're discussing. Okay? Now, Renee's up here to help me because of her experience, vast experience, in my opinion, as a co-op director for homeschoolers, and how she has organized and taught for 12 to 15 years in that respect, seeing those differences from the perspective of children. So she's here to give that kind of input. But all of what we're taking from here are taken from 2 books. One is more recently written. The first one is His Brain, Her Brain, written by a PhD, I believe a practicing physician, Walt Barrymore, and his wife, Barb, husband-wife perspective, looking at it from a godly perspective, the differences between the male and female brain. The second book was actually written a lot longer ago, 1991-92. By a woman named Anne Moir, also a PhD, but more a researcher, I believe. David Jessel is the writer that helped her to pen this. Her book was called Brain Sex, and it was extremely controversial even to this day. It's not from a godly perspective, it's from a science perspective. And even back in 91 and 92, they were learning that male and female brains were wired differently, but political correctness would not allow them to accept it. And we're still facing that today. Nobody wants to talk about this. In fact, some of you are probably bristling right now. Here's the thing. In an atmosphere of hate, it is awful to talk about. In an atmosphere of love, it's a blast to talk about. With a common belief that God designed us this way, we get this and we learn more about Him and His design for us. So let's go through this. Brain architecture versus chemistry. One thing we have to learn right up front is brain architecture is set in the womb. There is a hormonal bath that happens at 6 weeks?
6 or 7.
In the womb. Where the male brain gets one side of it shrunk. So if you want to know who's least balanced in the womb, it's the guys with the short hair. Human males and females are born with physical brain differences that influence how they think and react to their surroundings, mostly because of this hormonal bath that goes on in the womb. Now, this is not the child's own hormones. They don't actually kick in and create differences in brain chemistry until puberty. Prepubescent, it's all brain architecture. It's all about structure. But females are much more balanced. They don't go through that shrinking of one side of the brain or the other. And largely because they interact with males, they tend to be more left brain focused than right brain, because men are so incredibly right brain focused. Talk about that in a moment. It affects learning styles, especially in early ages. It affects play activity and all interaction with others at any age. Both of brain architecture. Chemistry is different. The chemical difference in the hormonal and neurohormonal influences on the brain prior to puberty are pretty balanced. Most of the differences, in fact, all the differences are physical in the structure of the brain. Brain chemistry doesn't kick in until puberty. That's when they say the hormones start raging. And that's when different hormones affect the brain differently and wire us even more towards certain tendencies. And to get even further apart. Now, when I say these are all generalities, alright, I want us to understand this. We're not talking about any individual specific person in the room. I will say men generally are better in control of their emotions than women. There's a brain reason for that. But that's not the way this family works. She's much better in control of her emotions than I am. If you've heard me speak on any sensitive subjects, if you've heard me speak on non-sensitive subjects, I think you will know. I'm very emphatic. I get fired up. I cry at times and people go, what in the world? What's wrong with him? That his hormones are raging. So they're not always the same. And to prove this, I want everybody to stand up. Could you all please stand up? It is a known fact, scientifically proven, that men worldwide, on average, are 7% taller than women. Now, not I'll grant you, in that respect, the tallest person in this room is probably a man. Especially when we take our shoes off. All right? But there are some men in this room that are not, that are shorter than some women. And there's some women that are shorter than some men. So when I talk about generalities, it's not applying to you specifically. A generality is a principle, an idea to take that helps us with all of our interrelationships up front so that we can understand how to deal with others. For the most part, we're all wired in the ways we're going to be talking about, but because of experiences and so on in life, we can develop those other tendencies as well. Okay? Thank you. Please be seated. Let's talk about brain architecture. We'll spend most of the time here on these elements of the slide, charts. Brain architecture, brain chemistry, and also brain processing. The two major areas of the brain, we won't get into all of the brain is a very complicated thing, but we'll just talk about two big systems, the limbic system and the cerebral cortex. Now, the limbic system is more about sensory response. Certain bodily functions that the brain controls that are not necessarily thought of. Thinking is involved at times, but it's not necessarily controlled by a choice or decision. I don't have to think to breathe, but my brain is still controlling that. I don't think, okay, inhale, now exhale. Okay, inhale, that's just wired, it's working that way. So when we talk about sensory response, this is the way, this is sight, touch, hearing, smell, taste, those kinds of things, okay? The cerebral cortex is more about rationale. It involves more of the thinking process and how the brain is wired to think. Look at the differences here in terms of the structure of the brain. The male brain, in terms of sensory response, has a smaller amygdala, a smaller hippocampus, and a smaller cingulate gyrus. I believe that's the way it's pronounced. Now, the amygdala, for the most part, it has many functions, but it serves to help in terms of short-term memory. Women have a much larger amygdala than men. Their short-term memory capabilities are much better than men. Doesn't mean that men can't develop it. It means we're not wired in the same way. The hippocampus has to do mostly with long-term memory. Guess what, guys? We lose our tip. Her brain is wired, is bigger in terms of the hippocampus. She has a better long-term memory than we have because it's smaller. Doesn't mean we can't develop it. We can. But we don't have a pattern there. We don't have a basis for it in design. Now, we can forget everything now, leave the room. I mean, it's just my brain, my heart, sorry, I can't remember. I remember the date I proposed to her. She doesn't. She gets the flowers and she goes, oh, yeah, that's right, this is the day he proposed to. So, man, you can train your brain to do that. Outlook. We have tools. Men love tools. Yep, for those rooms. The cingulate gyrus is about emotion. Now, in this case, it's larger, that portion of the brain is larger in women than in men. So in a sense, women have a harder time controlling the emotions. They have a much stronger influence on what's going on in her body. We're talking about sensory response now. Than do males. Males aren't as in tune with those emotions. It's not as strong an influence on them with what they're doing as it is for women. Because, in fact, our cingulate gyrus is smaller. Now, guys, here's what we went out. This is the hypothalamus. It's larger in males than in females. The hypothalamus regulates temperature in the body. I don't know any man that gets up in the middle of the night and opens and closes windows because he's cold. How many men brought a sweater with you to this room?
We have a jacket.
That's not her fault. That's the way her brain is wired. It doesn't regulate temperature as well as it does in men. Men are much easier. We take care of, you know, we walk out in the middle of the snow with no shirt on and shovel the walkway, and, you know, we're going to be looking at sweat and we don't need a coat. You know, I get sick. That's not how I got sick. The hypothalamus is also regulates us in terms of sleep. Most sleep disorders are female sleep disorders. Most women need sleeping pills. Some men do. And I think it's a wired ability, unless your brain is somehow, you know, malformed or you have some problems or something going on, or you drink too much coffee. I think it's a singular ability of men and women to be able to sleep whenever we want to. Every man in this room is thinking, well, I don't want to nap right now. Right? And we could. I get up at 9, make breakfast, and at 10, I can sleep. We can sleep anytime we want. And they don't get that. She's up 4, 5, 6 times a night. I call her the night fairy. Opening windows, closing windows, fixing the thermostat. I never the only time I touch the thermostat is when she tells me to. No, up, no, down, up, no. And she's pulling up covers. You know, I'll go to bed because I'm hot. No covers. I wake up, I got covers all over me. Well, I was cold. You must have been cold as well. No. I'm sweating. My whole side of the bed is wet. It's the way they're wired. Also, sex drive is in the hypothalamus. Now, this is something incredibly important to teach teenage boys, especially when the testosterone hits. The reason being is we don't really recognize to a great degree that they're not wired like this. They're much more balanced with respect to this. That's not the way sex works in men, especially when we become competitive with testosterone. It's a huge drive. And because we're spatial in our thinking, we'll talk about that in a moment, not verbal and not balanced in that respect, we see forms and shapes and we're drawn to them. Married man, happily married man, 20, 25, 30 years, sees a woman in a tight sweater with a nice figure walking down the street right next to his wife, and he goes, wow. Oh, she's not anywhere near as pretty as you are. You have to do that. That has to be regulated by men internally. It's got to be taught to teenage boys. And that's why we tell, you know, teenage girls, not, you know, make sure you're dressing modestly. Because that's a huge power if boys, males, are not controlling it. Strongest man in scripture, other than Christ, Samson, look what happened to him. He had the strength outside, but he didn't have the ability to control that hypothalamus. Look what happened. Let's move to the cerebral cortex. Now, we could talk about frontal lobe, parietal lobe, and all those. But this is about reasoning and thinking. And for the most part, because of that brain bath that we go through in the womb, and our left side of the brain is shrunk, men are born physically wired to be heavy right brain. Men tend to be more focused on ideas and much more prone to imagination. Boys have the ability to shut out of reality. It's a lot easier than women. Women can watch a movie and still be thinking about, oh, I've got to do laundry, and I've got to put the kids to bed by 6 o'clock, you know, 9 o'clock, because I've got to get up in the morning at 6 o'clock to do this, and all that's going on. And we'll talk about that in a moment when we get down to the white man issues. Not guys. Boom. That's where it's at. And we'll watch movies sometimes, and they'll think, this is so stupid. No, it's not. It's cool. It's cool. Look at the machines, and they're killing each other, and look at the blood. You can't possibly not like this. Movie tastes completely different when you came in. That doesn't mean you can't train yourself again to appreciate others. But that's typically what we do. We had a friend of ours was a 12, 13-year-old boy. We went to Disney World with our 12 and 13-year-old girls. At the time, it was Courtney and Chelsea when they were older. And they went to Bug's Life. Has anyone ever been to Bug's Life in Disney World? It's a cute little 3D thing that, you know, it shows the bugs and stinks. Stink comes out of the stink bomb explodes. Stink comes out of the seed and spritz in your face and so on. That's kind of fun. And all my girls are laughing. This boy is screaming his head off. And on that screen, the stink bug is growing. And you know it's going to explode. And everyone's getting nervous. And they release a bunch of bugs into the seats, and you can feel things crawling around your feet. He's screaming bloody murder. What is wrong with you? He can't shut it down. And he's got this 3D thing on, so it makes it even worse. Boys' brains just take off with them. I loved The Wizard of Oz when I was a boy. But every time the witch came on, I would hide behind the couch like this. No, no, no. What's wrong with Brian? Oh, the witch is on. She was a good witch. She's one of the best witches I've ever seen. She's amazing. But I couldn't stand watching it because I would have bad dreams for 3 weeks. That's the way a male brain is wired, even in the young ages. Much more imaginative, much more creative, much more artistic. They don't want to be told something. They want to do it. You want to teach a boy? Don't explain it to him verbally. Don't write it on a piece of paper and have him read it. Put it in his hands. Let him do it. That's what they want to do. They want to be active. They want to be doing things. They want to be accomplishing things. They're very spatial. Males can look at a picture of something and look at it almost 3D in their brain. They can imagine what the other side of it is. Mechanics are that way. You can look at an engine and know what's going on the other side, how it's designed, how it's working. I say that because I just looked at the best mechanic I know, Mr. Helling. We're going to need you later, aren't we? Yeah, we'll need you later in the world.
Do we?
Oh. We need a mechanic. But we're very spatial, very holistic. We want to see the end from the beginning. We're very results-oriented in our brain architecture. Don't tell me about A and B, the process, until I know what C is going to be. We got to figure that out first. Don't have me deal with one little element in the process when I don't know what the whole thing does. I get frustrated by that. I got to see the whole picture. Women, on the other hand, are much more balanced and able to go from one side of the brain to the other and are skilled to be able to do that. We'll talk about that in a moment. But because I think men are so right-brained and they're living in our world, for the most part, it's changing, but they are much more heavily left-brained. They have to deal with logic. You watch television or movies, women are constantly being accused of being illogical. They're not. They're much more logical than males in the long run. They're much more good at reasoning. They're exceptionally skilled in speech and communication skills. We'll talk about this a bit later, but when men have a problem, they want to think about it. When women have a problem, they want to talk about it. Because it's through those alliances and those relationships that those problems are being resolved. Guys don't see it that way. If you try to talk to them because they got a problem, they say, "Let me alone. I got a problem. I got to fix it. I got to think about it." Women are different in that respect. They're much more practical. They're more focused on details, which makes them much better multitaskers. They're linear in their thinking. And they're focused on specifics and tasks. Now, this gray matter, white matter thing. Gray matter is the stuff of thinking within the brains. It's the physical stuff of thinking. So, when you're processing information, your gray matter is at work. Men, we have 6.5 times more gray matter than women. Seminar over. Thanks. See ya. No. So we think as men that we're the thinkers. And we are, from a deep perspective, from a focused perspective, from an analytical perspective. But look at this one. White matter within the brain, which you very rarely hear about, which is the transmittal stuff that connects all the lobes of the brain. White matter, women have 9.5 times more white matter than males. So their brain is popping all over the place. Everything is connected. And it's moving all around all the time. Which makes them look indecisive, not necessarily. That means they're just considering everything, and they've got a lot to consider. Not males. We're only looking right here. That's all we're concerned about. Quite often, we'll find a solution for this, and we'll create 6 other problems. Women are much more better at those kinds of solutions that involve everybody, especially when it comes to relationships and alliances. to figure out solutions. 9.5 times more of the transmittal fluid that allows the brain to interact with other portions within the brain. There's a guy, I think his name is called, it's a PhD named Gungas out of Wisconsin. You can find this on YouTube. He does a really great presentation on the way the male-female brains. Talks about the male brain being all compartmentalized, boxes in the brain. Anyone ever see this? There are boxes in the brain. And men have one thing in each box. And when they want to work on it, they take out one box, and there it is. That's what they're working on. That's not the way women's brains think. Women's brains are cracking and popping and wiring, and everything's going on at once. And they're trying to manage all that. They got everything going on all at once. And they're trying to work all that out because of the balanced nature of their brain and because of this white matter. Now, guys, this Gungas guy says, guys have one box in their brain that has nothing in it. And we quite often take out that one box. And our wives come up to us and say, what do you think about? And we say, nothing. And she just thinks, well, he doesn't want to tell me what he's thinking about. No, I am literally thinking about nothing. There's nothing between these lines. Quite often I'll say something to my wife, and I can tell she's immediately thinking, what's he really saying to me? I'm saying what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? So this is the focused nature of the male brain. Women's brains are not that way. They're trying to deal with everything all at once, and it becomes overwhelming sometimes. And the more tasks they pick up, the more relationships, the more alliances they have, and having to manage all those things exhausts them. Men become exhausted in a different way. When we focus so deeply for hours, days, weeks on something that we're trying to figure out from work or in the Bible or something, we can get into detailed studies. I wake up at 6 in the morning, and it's 2:30 in the afternoon before I realize I'm still in my pajamas. I haven't taken a shower yet, and she's asking me, how come you haven't taken a shower? Because I had to wash your towel. Because I got focused on something, and I'm there all day. And if she hadn't broke me up, I would have realized, I would have still been on it. That's the way the male brain thinks. And then after that, after we're done focusing, we need veg time. We need a Sunday afternoon golf tournament on television. Yeah, the guys know what I'm talking about. There's something about a golf tournament. It's like it's set up for you. It's set up like they even whisper, you know. Yeah, Jim, we should be quiet because we don't want to disturb him. It's like they're talking to you. Yeah, Brian started upright, but now he's moving to the reclined position. Good job, Brian. I love golf matches on Sunday afternoons, especially after an exhausting Sabbath. Speaking at two different places, Bible studies, all these things. On a Sunday afternoon golf tournament, man, when I hear that guy's voice come on, and it's just a nice, peaceful setting, I go to sleep. That's veg time. Guys need that. That's the way our brains are wired. We need veg time. And it looks to me like I'm just being lazy, but it's the way our brains are wired. Now, I wanted to stop here because I wanted you to talk about, this is where there's a huge influence in the younger, in children, because before we move into brain chemistry, and we'll get to that fairly quickly, I wanted to talk a little bit about how this affects children and our child-rearing principles.
Scientists have studied babies when they were born, and within minutes you can tell sometimes the difference between the boys and the girls, so it's not something that's conditioned by the family. It's actually inborn. It's part of the brain architecture. Girls start talking right away. The boys may not. And the girls start talking to faces or pictures of people, whereas the boys will talk to the mobile, the truck, whatever happens to be around. So the girls become articulate much earlier than the boys do. And that, as they move into the school age period of life, schools are set up for girls. They just really are. Teachers love the students sitting down at the table, doing the coloring. Let's learn to read. Let's write. Let's be still. The boys need to learn by running around the room. And you can't really teach reading by running around the room very well. So the girls have the advantage in the classroom. And because they're already more articulate, they could speak better, earlier, and more clearly, way earlier than the boys. The boys are at a real disadvantage. They end up getting the ADD label on them. They end up on drugs for that disorder because they just needed to be more active in the classroom. They also, I think it's 4 out of 5 students in a remedial reading classroom will be boys because they're being taught to read much earlier. However, that they do catch up, and by the time they hit puberty, they are catching up very quickly. And then the girls who never really needed to develop their spatial skills because they're sitting around in the classroom now are going to be at a disadvantage because those boys had those spatial skills to begin with. So the math concepts, the science concepts are come easily to them. They had those already. They've now worked at their language skills as well. So they've got the whole package going forward into high school years, whereas the girls have, you know, plugged in the numbers into the equation. They can get the right answer. But when it requires thinking on a level that applies that to real life, they are now at a disadvantage. So we see the difference there.
What starts out as an advantage for females turns into a disadvantage because they're not taught spatially early on. And the boys feel like they're always falling behind, but if they competitively keep up and they're more competitive because of their brain structure, and then when testosterone actually kicks in at puberty, they get even more competitive, they catch up, and those spatial abilities now start kicking in when they have to apply the things they've been taught. So that's why one of the problems our school system has right now, and I know it's one of the main initiatives within our educational system, is to try to get more women, females, into math and science, into those kinds of disciplines. And really something needs to be changed in the earlier ages in school for that to change. As I said, brain chemistry really doesn't start affecting the brain until puberty. Prepubescent children don't typically have hormonal influences in the brain. But there are different hormones that start raging within teenage boys and girls. Oxytocin, which is referred to in the his brain, her brain, as the cuddling or connectedness hormone. It has to do about feeling and touch and all those sensory things that women have an advantage of over males. They have much higher influence, much more higher levels of oxytocin in females after puberty than in males. Serotonin, which is the calming hormone, typically in a stressful situation, women will be more calm than men in a situation. Unless men have got specific training or something like that, in most cases we'll be the ones that freak out the most or want to act and do something without thinking through it because our communication is action-oriented. Women have higher levels of serotonin, men are much lower. Estrogen is the well-being and contentment hormone. Men have these hormones, but at much, much lesser levels, and at levels that don't influence us like it influences women. Women are sought and designed to seek well-being and contentment based upon what estrogen moves them to do. Progesterone is another one. This is the nurturing hormone, the ability to encourage, share affections, help other people personally. Very, very low in males, so we tend to come across as very blunt and uncaring and unfeeling. So we have to work on that. It's very high in women. Now, here's the other influences, though. Testosterone in males is the biggie. This drives us to be much more aggressive, much more assertive, and much more competitive. Male-to-male relationships in the teenage years are based on competition, not on relationships. My brother and I, the one thing we loved doing the most when we were growing up as kids, wrestling. We'd finish dinner and we'd say, Dad, can we go wrestle? Yeah, go ahead. We'd be out in the backyard wrestling. Neighbors would come over and say, you kids are fighting. They're fighting, they're wrestling. Would we get hurt? Yeah, all the time. But that's what we wanted to do. That's just the way these things are influencing us, even into the teenage years. Sports are important to both sexes, I get that. But females need to understand sports are so much more important to men because of this. We're competitive by nature. We're competitive because of the juices in our brains. It's much more important to us. We may both like baseball equally. But how many women here know that the third baseman for the 1927 New York Yankees was Lenny Groh, and that he had 11 home runs and batted 227? That's still stuck in the back of my brain, and I'm not even a Yankee fan. This is why boys can shout out all these, you know, statistics about sports that are meaningless. Their brains are wired to receive it, and that testosterone, the competitive nature, to know more than somebody else, to be able to do more than somebody else, we size each other up. May not be conscious, maybe it is. You know, you meet somebody first time, and he's taller than me, but I can slam dunk on him. Wait, he can't throw a football. He's got chicken arms. I'd like to get that guy out of the field. Come on, buddy. Let's go. Let's size him up right now. Let's see what you got. Come on, let me show this. That's the way our brains are wired, to be that way. We've got to control that. We've got to control it. Because Satan will take big advantage of that. We're much more assertive. We're much more less risk adverse. Women, because of the balanced nature of their brain, tend to be more cautious. They're weighing out all these things, all these decisions, all these principles. They know how everything will be affected by this one decision. Guys aren't thinking there. I have got to get this done. The Raiders have got to win the Super Bowl or my life is over. That's what I thought when I was 12, 13 years old. Testosterone does that to the brain. This next one is interesting. Vasopressin. It's a male hormone that grows over time. And because of the focused nature of the male mind, our bonding is to one person. It's to our wives. May not be there very strong in the early ages. So if a man loses his wife at 25, 30, 35, he can usually get through that. At age 80, it's fatal for a husband to lose his wife. He has no purpose or reason for existing. Vasopressin does that. Doesn't affect women the same way. Studies will show you that two 80-year-olds, married couples, been married for 50 years, the husband dies, the wife goes on. She grieves, she hurts, she carries that home with her the rest of her life, but she has the ability to go forward, make relationships, that finds value in life. Males can't do that as easily because of vasopressin. It's the bonding hormone in men, especially older men. The book that we talked about here, this is the Larimore book, they describe these two brains in two different terminology. Systematic thinking, this is the male brain. Systematizing or systemizing, that was for the extra team, that's my male brain. Systemizing is the drive to analyze things, the drive to explore and construct systems. It's not just enough for us to understand one little piece. We've got to understand the whole system. Intuitively figure out how things work. We want to understand how things work. That's why boys are sticking their fingers in electrical outlets. Well, why is it? That's why we blow things up all the time. How does this work? That's really cool. Jimmy down the street blew his hand off last week with a set of caps. How do we do that? Maybe we can do the same thing. Here, try it. We like to extract the underlying rules and principles that govern the behavior of a system. We want to deal with the whole picture, a holistic picture, not just one thing. We seek to understand. We want to conquer. We have to conquer something. We have to overcome something. You want to know why your husband will not stop and ask directions? Because we can figure this out on our own. We don't need alliances with other people to help us. That's the way the female brain is wired. Here's a guy. He lives in the area. He probably knows. Ask him. No, that's failure. God will save our marriage.
Yes.
That's just the way we're wired. We want to understand. We like the challenge. She would have written directions to some place from some people that we're going to go see. I'd say, keep them in your purse. I can figure this out. This is pre-garment. And we would wander all over the long town for hours until we finally found the place of cheese recreation. Not hours. We usually found the right spot. We like to invent things anew. don't like the way things are working right now. We want to make it better. You ever see Tim Allen from Home Improvement? He has a great stand-up routine. He talks about being over his sink. He's washing the kitchen sink. He's using this little flaky little spray thing. You know, he barely gets enough stuff out to wipe the dishes off. I'm going to fix this. He puts in an air compressor and says monster machines and so on. And he pulls on it. He's got it all gas powered. And now, out the window, he's cleaning his neighbor's aluminum siding. Yeah. That's what I like. That's our little tools. We want to increase the effectiveness of the system. The male brain is wired to systemize. But this is more challenging. I'm not saying it's impossible. It's more challenging for women because their brains are empathetic. This is the way Larimore has described the female brain. They're empathetic. Empathizing is the drive to identify another's emotions and thoughts, something males are not prone to do. We have to work at it. We have to study it. We have to develop the skill. And we want to respond to recent empathizing pain, we want to respond to an appropriate emotion. It occurs whenever we feel an appropriate emotion, emotional reaction in response to the other's emotion. And that's women have the abilities, the sensory perceptions to see them. Married men and women will have a conversation with another married couple, and they'll walk away, and the wife will say, "Wow, did you see that?" And they'll say, "What? You didn't see that? Oh, they're having problems. How do you know that?" "They are, I just know." "Well, what did they say?" "Well, it wasn't what they said. I could just see it. It was in their faces. I could feel it." "Get out of here." We gotta quit jumping to conclusions like this. Slowly you find out, yeah, they're actually having a problem. Women's intuition is not fantasy. It's not magic. It's not theory. It's wired in the brain. They are much more sensitive to these things. They pick up on faces. They're wired to do so. They see nuances and so on. We'll go through this. When they seek to understand another person, they predict their behavior and to resonate emotionally. They're building alliances. For the most cases, what women try to do to resolve issues, fix problems in their life, is build alliances. Talk with others about it. Let's learn more about the subject. The female brain is wired to empathize, but this is much more challenging for women. Possible, it's more challenging, it has to be worked out. So here's how information is processed in the brain. The brain type, highly systematic versus highly empathetic. The highly systematic brain, the male brain, is much more able to compartmentalize. We talked about those boxes, one thing at a time. That's what we do. Women are much better at multitasking because of the way their brain is wired. They can handle 6, 7, 8 things at one time. You think when you're sitting down watching a movie with your wife that she's in love with it as much as you are. I watch my older girls now, they've got their iPads while they're watching a movie. And they're talking to 18 friends at one time while they're watching a movie, and they're not missing a beat. Not me, I'm absorbed. You know what else is weird? This is weird. This is very weird. One of my daughters will be sitting over here facing the TV that way. Can barely see me peripherally. And I'll check out, we're watching a movie I'm not interested in, and there's no killing, there's no blood, there's no machines or sci-fi stuff or whatever, no cowboys. So I'm kind of starting to check out, and I just look over at one of my daughters. I just glance in her direction. Here's what she does. How can they be sensitive to that? They see peripherally better than we do. And they felt it. Dad's looking at me. Don't ever forget that, fathers. When your daughter comes running down the stairs like this and jumps to the bottom of the stairs while you're in the kitchen and goes and knocks over your tea and she stands there like this and you have absolutely no idea what you're supposed to say. Is it her hair? Is it her dress? Is it her shoes? What's going on there? Just say, "Wow, you look great. Thank you." You run up the stairs. Suddenly. However, if you notice, this is the subtlest of things. You see the movie Incredibles? They caught this beautifully. Right at the end of the movie, the daughter just knows something different. Put your hair over to hear. Dad noticed it. "Well, you wear your hair differently. It looks nice." And it just fills them. really means a lot to them when you focus on them that way. Maybe they believe in that. They're much more, in terms of rationally oriented, in terms of thinking, relationally oriented. Relational. We tend to have challenges with that. Women are much more relationally oriented. We're better project oriented, goal oriented, results things. Yeah, we can get there. We can focus. We can get everybody online. We can control this important project. We're much better at project management. Awareness, we're not wired to. We come across blunt often than that. We've got to overcome certain things to be aware of things. Not them. They're wired for it. They're much more aware. We're better at focusing. Digging deep. Finding underlying principles. Taking the time to do that. In terms of response to stress, I love this. The Larimores describe it this way. When men are faced with stressful situations, their response is either fight or flight. We can take this on, we can overcome. Did I spill tea all over the floor? I'm sorry. I gave that to one of my daughters, I won't tell you which one. My clumsy nature. Men fight or flight. They either want to take it on, go by the horns, let's overcome, let's focus on it, defeat it, or you know what, we got no chance here, I'm out of here. That's typically the response that men have.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. Women respond to stress differently. They tend, it's either tend or befriend. Let's tend to the issue. Let's befriend. Let's create alliances. And that will help us overcome the stress. In response to risk, as we mentioned, men are much more aggressive. I don't think women invented bungee jumping. Maybe. I'm pretty sure that was a male thing. I don't think women stood at the top of a bridge and said, now, I wonder if there's a way we can actually jump off of this and not get hurt. They even need rubber bands. It's just what we do. Humans are much more balanced. And they tend to be much more cautious, again, because we're trying to balance all these things together, and especially keeping track of the relationships with our moms. Perception and awareness. The systematic mind, the male mind, we're better at skills that require spatial ability. So we see things spatially, not verbally, not because we saw it on our notes that we took someplace, or remember something verbally. We see it, we recognize shape and form. We're much more aggressive, competitive, and self-assertive. So we tend to be a little bit blunt in noticing things that are going on around us when we're pushing through these things. There's a greater need for hierarchy and rules with males, because there's this results thing that's going to happen, and we've got these competitive minds. Talk about Monopoly, your sister.
Okay, as kids, my sister and I would play Monopoly, and if somebody was doing badly, you know, I was winning or something, you know, the kind thing is to just help her out, you know, okay, you can have a free pass, or okay, you can have, I'll just give you $500 so that you can pay your rent, or whatever, you know, because she's going to feel badly, and you can't do that to your sister.
This is not Monopoly. The purpose of Monopoly is to financially crush your opponent. And after you do this, you don't give them $500 or park place or whatever. I don't play Monopoly with them anymore. See, that's the rules. These are not in the rules. I'll look through the rule book. The rule doesn't say you're supposed to give money to people who are dead financially. No, you can't do that. We need those rules because they show us how to get to the win, which is the most important thing for us. Not how you win, just win. Winning ugly is invented by men. We have the ability to focus, concentrate, again, dig deep, problem solutions, deeper solutions, long-term solutions. We're less aware of subtlety and nuance, and this is not a choice. I'm sorry, it's not a choice. I live with 5 women. I'm learning to notice subtlety and nuance. I'm getting better, I think. But I'm not wired to do it. It's something that I force myself to do. I don't notice it. They see it almost naturally. It's the way they're wired. We see value in the process only if it means, as a means to an end, only if it's focused on the result. So don't tell me about a process unless there's a solution at the end of this. Let's talk about it from the perspective of the solution. Women are different. More sensitive to sound, smell, taste, touch. This is women's intuition. It's the basis for it. They acquire these skills early. language, fluency, memory. You can talk to a three-year-old girl. Try talking to a three-year-old boy. My dad used to have to grab me by the head. See toys?
Where?
There were toys on the ceiling or the walls. They're on the floor. No, right in front of you. Grab my head. Toys! Pick them up! That's how I would clean my room with my dad's hand on my head. You have to be shown this stuff. That's the way a boy's mind thinks. And you know, I don't mind that. The older I got, the tougher my dad got in my stories. My dad is a gentle, sweet, loving man. I'll tell you that someday. Very gentle and kind. But that not when I was with my boys. My dad beats the tar out of me. And I can tell you, he's a tough guy. My dad can beat your dad. You ever say that with your dad around when you were a boy? Yeah, how does that make them feel? Mr. Smith, my dad can take you out any day. Right, Dad? You can get in the house, right? Women don't tend to need those kinds of physical instructions, especially the girls even at young ages. You can talk to them, you can communicate. They're much more aware of what's expected of them, and you can communicate that early. They process sensory and verbal information much earlier in their life and much more skilled at it. They're more sensitive to social and personal context, what's going on, what's appropriate behavior in this situation. We're too focused for that sometimes. We're not seeing what's going on around us, more influence on others. We have to work at that. Women are more aware of nuance, the periphery, expression, gesture. We don't have skills in this particular area. Now, in terms of communication, she was much more talkative than her first one. Go ahead, just jump in anything you want.
You seem to be covering.
Okay.
And I know we're trying to hurry because we're going to.
Yes, I'm ready for all this. Okay, let's get through this quick. All right, systematic brain, how does it communicate? Men tend to want to think through a problem. More gray matter, not as much white matter. When a guy's got a problem, the worst thing a woman can do is come up and say, "Got a problem? Let's talk about it." What? No, I can't talk about it. I got a problem. I got to think it through. I got to get that gray matter working. I don't have as much white matter. Let me think about it. Give the man time to think. We're results oriented. It's much easier for me to do something when I see the end product. If I'm building a deck or something, if I can keep going back to the picture of the completed project, I'm much more enthused about continuing on. Because halfway through, I worked my tail off putting in 17 piers, 48 inches deep, 12 inches in diameter. I worked for months on this, the foundation. And I looked, and all I had was 17 piers underground, nothing. Where's the deck? I thought you were building a deck, Brian. I am. Well, where's the deck? Well, it's coming. If we can keep looking at that end result, we can make it through the process. We're more forward-looking. So when you're communicating to a man, talk about the goal. Talk about what's ahead. Point them in the future. And come from the standpoint of fixing problems. That's what men like to do. We like to fix problems. We love those kinds of challenges. Men speak the language of action. We want to do something. We want to transform emotion into a manageable solution. Doesn't mean we don't have emotions. It means we want to employ them rightly to get to the solution. We respond with results-driven activity and efforts to fix what's broken. Oftentimes, my wife will come to me and talk to me while I'm focused on something else, and I don't have time for this, so I'm listening, and every other sentence I'm proposing a fix. Well, here's what you do. Here's how you fix that. Here's the solution. And she has to say, stop. I don't want a fix. I don't want a solution. I just need to talk to you about this. I understand her now because her brain's not wired that way. Let her talk. Let her create that affiliation. We're much more assertive. We need control often in the situation. And we need to be focused on decision making. And communicating with a male, that's very important. Keep that in mind as we go through the role plays. Women, in terms of having a much more empathetic brain, they want to talk through a problem. They want to get that white matter working in the brain. They want to communicate with others. They want to build alliances. They want to get people involved for an overall solution. much better at that. They are process-oriented. To them, the process is enjoyable. That doesn't mean they're not results-oriented, but they're also not so focused on that they overlook portions of the process, like men do. They're much more detailed, much more task-oriented, which makes them great multitaskers, and they tend to work toward healing relationships, whereas men tend to overlook that. Whereas men speak the language of action, women speak the language of relationships. They like to make connections, affiliations for resolutions. They like to respond with encouragement, openness to process, and finding common ground. They're much more collaborative, cooperative, and they are much more interested in inclusion and getting everybody involved in the process.
Should I go ahead and at least tell a story about yesterday?
Yes.
Just to...
You're here.
I know. So sorry, girl.
Go ahead.
We were planning to drive up to the Twin Cities as for this weekend, 6-hour drive, and all of a sudden we became aware that there was a caravan going up. And as soon as my girls heard that the caravan was going up, they said, oh, we got to be a part of that because, of course, all the kids are going to be there. It's all about the relationships. But we had a young man also riding with us on the way up, and so we wanted to check with him and make sure that that was okay. Well, he said that was fine, but he was mentally questioning the rationale by taking a 6-hour trip from Chicago up to the Twin Cities and making it a 10-hour trip so that we could go all the way downtown to Union Station, drive up to Milwaukee, drive across the state of Wisconsin, and finally reach the Twin Cities. Because, of course, he's going to get there by Phoenix by sundown, and my girls were all about the process. We had all of our friends there.
That's a good story. All right, so now I'd like to do this. We'll put some of this into action. How many in here understand the Pythagorean theorem?
The high schoolers!
Let's get some of the high schoolers. All right, Shaylee, you're my teacher. Come on up. Take one of these chairs. Can you take the microphone over?
Yeah, this one.
Yeah, Shaylee.
Come on.
Here is the challenge. Now I need two students, seventh graders. And you don't have to be a seventh grader, you just need to know how to act like one. So you have to use the word like a lot and awesome. Okay, Brett. Is that Anson? Okay, Anson, come on up. All right, here is your challenge, teacher. Oh, no. You know what, Anson, we'll get you in another one. I need a female. All right, we'll have Anson's sister, Alicia. I always say that wrong. I always want to say Alicia. Is it Alicia? Alicia, sorry. One of your fingers. That name portion in the male brain is not as functional. Okay, here's your challenge. These two seventh graders are remedial. Not really, they're both very smart. However, they're going to act remedial. You are a high school, seventh grade math tutor. And here's your scenario. The seventh grade math tutor is assigned the task of teaching the Pythagorean theorem to two students, one male, one female, who are both having a difficult time understanding it. Take about 5 minutes with that, and let us see what you do.
What did you get in the warm-ups?
So just explain it. All right. So you have a right triangle, and you're trying to find what one side equals. So you take the right angle and the hypotenuse of the right angle.
Look at hypotenuse.
That is the side that is across from the right angle. So you have three sides of the triangle. You have your A, your B, and your C. So your C is the hypotenuse.
Are you talking about like that long side that slopes down?
Yes.
Or up?
So you have your right angle, which is the two that meet, they are perpendicular, and then the one that connects them on the other side is hypotenuse. Okay. So the length of your A, which is one of the sides of the...
Why is it A?
You have your A and your B, and the C is always the hypotenuse. So you have to add this, you have to take A squared and then add it to B squared, and then it will equal C squared. Doesn't matter. I don't think.
Well, if they're squared, how can we all get, what's the point of all of this?
It's just how they're related. So you have the two sides, and the sum of them squared will equal the third side squared.
So how do you tell which side is the third side and the first side is the second side?
Yeah, that's why you have your hypotenuse. Which is...
Which one's the hypotenuse again?
All right, good job. Maybe. That's kind of clear. That's remedial sums. We could pick up something there. Jamie Bain, a woman, is teaching verbally, right? How is that hitting the male? Using her hands? That was good. Gesturing would have been good. Would a prop have worked better? What else could she have done? Being the fact that men are results oriented, what does a Pythagorean theorem allow you to do? Right angles, right? At a distance. Maybe the building of a deck or something. Create a problem for the male that gives him something to fix, something to figure out. Like my deck, the right angle against the house was easy. How do you get that right angle when you're 16 feet away from the house? How does that work? That's when I finally learned the Pythagorean theorem. You know, I learned it in geometry. I had an application. For the male, the application would work. Now, even the male, I think that Alicia was doing a very good job of being a male. She was also focused on the letters A, B, C. And I could see that Whit was more focused on looking in his mind, turning things around. He was talking about the size. Did you notice that? Much more spatial. So in terms of teaching the boy, we put you in a typical situation where blackboard, no chalk, no thing. Plus we had them be extra remedial, so. But I think you did a great job. Thank you. Good job. Okay, we have time for one more. This is going to be on the team.
Okay. I need a mechanic. I need the mechanic's manager, also a male. Anybody want to be with the manager of the garage? Male? Come on. Okay, Tom, thank you. Go on up there. Take the two seats furthest away. Now I need a woman that's worked in the corporate world and has had a lot of HR experience.
I know who it is.
Doesn't have to be. But it could be anyone. Come on, Captain. You can do it. How many want Catherine to do this?
Catherine!
That wasn't her competitive nature. That was her nature for affiliation. She needed encouragement. Alright. Here is your scenario. A corporate human resources director for IFIWU is asked to visit local facilities and speak to store managers, which is Tom, about a new company initiative to hire more women. In one store, she is meeting heavy resistance in the field with one store manager, that's Tom, and his lead mechanic, which is Mike. Take it away.
So, we really need to get some more women in your operation here.
Do I get an answer? Do I like getting an answer?
Why is that important? Don't you have any clean jobs that we can do?
Which bays are the women going to occupy and which ones the guys get? Are we going to divide that up, or where are they going to put the tools?
Don't you have like a front desk job or something?
One of them to do mechanical jobs, right?
Well, I just said we wanted to work in the facility, yeah.
Well, they'd be doing my job probably, because all desks are guys here. Doing the mechanic work and not doing the desk job. So,
you can't do the mechanic work?
You could if they like to get their hands dirty.
No, you.
That's why I have him.
Then what am I going to do? Say, what am I going to do?
Look for more mechanics to do his work and my
work. So you don't have any jobs that we could do? No. That's very male dominant in here.
I think there's other jobs that might be able to be performed out in the shop. What did you have in mind? Are you talking about the oil changes or the inspections?
Don't you guys do like billing or paperwork?
We have computers for that.
But who runs the computers?
They're programmed so they run by themselves. We could probably use them as sales personnel.
Right.
Sell,
yes.
Hires.
There you go.
Or maybe sell extra services. You know, guides them to buy more things. You know,
perfect.
Come in,
yes.
Get their oil changed, maybe we could have them sell.
So how many salespeople do you need?
It depends on how many customers we have. And we don't have very many customers right now.
Well, maybe if you had more salespeople, you would have more customers.
I guess we could build it and they will come.
I like the movie reference there. That was good. All right, thank you. All right, food challenges.
Thank you for doing that.
It's interesting from the perspective that the other group and this group, the first thing they said was hands dirty. They like to get their hands dirty. Well, and it was accepted by the HR person about getting their hands dirty. It was almost like it's something that nobody agreed that a woman would be willing to do, but certainly is a possibility that women would be willing to do that. Now, the overall assumption was that women couldn't do the mechanic work in this one. That wasn't the case over there, though. They were trying to get more mechanics on the floor. One of the suggestions over there was. Did anyone ever see the movie Mike Has a Mini? Vinny's girlfriend takes the stage, and they give her a tough question, and then they turn to an angel finding or something, and she just nails and blows the guy away. And then the guy says, okay, well, she's attempting. In a situation like that, where she can explain the angel finding from 1964 Chevy 350 engine or something like that, you show that the mechanics get it. So they're seeing that she can do this. Their focus was results oriented. We gotta change the oil in people's cars. We get our hands dirty. We're down in the bays. We're doing these things. Their issue, their focus was results. The HR's issue was, it was relational. We gotta get more women in the workplace. We gotta balance out our workplace in terms of diversity. Relational issues. You see that happen in more and more corporate America, not just in football clubs. So the focus there was much more about relationships. If an individual who wanted to build the relationships was more results oriented, they might have worked better. If she could have actually presented someone, a woman that came with her, that was a qualified mechanic, and saw that, see what was possible, actually work with her, show her, show them that she could do what they do. That's all they were concerned about, was getting the work done. They were concerned that they'd have to mollycoddle this woman with their hands dirty. So our approach more about the results-oriented nature of the males who are working the bays. And I think the males were trying as best they could, at least there, to be more concerned about the diversity issues in the workplace. I'm going to try another one of these, or do you want to, are we done for past time? And I know the kids want to break and go get ready for the Royal Ball tonight. So, any other questions about this? I appreciate your time and attention. This was enjoyable. Appreciate it.